afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is for Monday, September 21st, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melodie.
Hello, how are you today?
Couldn't be better.
Oh, well, that's quite a statement. That is quite a statement. So that's good to hear. Although I could say things couldn't have been better for gold, perhaps, as we segue into the market prices for gold. Although gold today wasn't really bad. I mean, we had a huge dip this morning. We had an 1879 low, and the metal turned around. I mean, we're down under 2%, $1,913, but we're still down 37. Silver was down $2, a little over $2 at $24.75. Platinum was down $47 at $886. Palladium was down $87 at $2,307. Now, what I like about today's down is like, oh, well, silver's down too, and, you know, gold's, you know, gold outperformed all the metals today. All the other precious metals. I mean, yes, they were all down, but gold was down the least. Even at the big drop at 1879, gold was down the least. And why do I even bother with that? Because it shows the stability that gold provides. And that's important in any portfolio. I don't care what it is. You need to have the item that provides you a little more stability, and ways you speculate into the other areas of an investment. So gold did good today. Silver wasn't so bad. I mean, it was down a little over 8% on the day. Still down a little, still down 7.62%, but they have lots of upside potential. And I think this is what you're going to see in the bottom. Silver, I can never call silver, because you don't know how these traders can push the price up so quickly and drop it like a rock. I think the fundamentals for silver are very strong. I just don't know if this is the the bottom. I think for gold, it built that real strong base at 1900, that resistant level, and I think we're going to stay here. But those are my predictions, and we'll see what happens. And it all came on the back of a stronger U.S. dollar, up 0.55 at 93.56. Doesn't seem to be all that strong to get those kind of moves in the precious metals. But crude oil was down $1.61 at $39.50. And I just think it was one of those days that people didn't know what to do. And I don't know. We'll do some more reading over the night and see what really was the cause on a lot of this. Now, the Dow had tumbled more than 900 points earlier in the day. Did come back 400 of them. The Dow is down 509 points at 27,147. The NASDAQ, I'm not sure what the low on the NASDAQ was, but it's barely changed on the day at 10,778. The same with the S&P at 3,281. The S&P was down a little over 1%. 10-year yield down 0.02 at 0.67%. Germany was hit big, down almost 4.5%. Germany was down almost 3.5%. Hong Kong was down a little over 2%. Japan was happy, barely changed, so I guess that's a happy deal for the day. If you're in any of those investments, that's probably all because of that new leader coming in. Who knows? But it was a weird day in the markets. And, you know, you could say there was a couple of things, but Dave, I still think it all comes back to the debt. And we've certainly have seen some more numbers coming out. I mean, sure, there might be some economic forecasts that keep getting better, but I think we're really seeing the nip of the dead when you're looking at federal government debt. Now, the government debt rose at a 59% pace 59%, pay 60% in the second quarter. Well, that's not to be expected. I mean, my God, they shut down the world economies, along with ours. And I think we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on today's program. But I think with everything that's going on, it just shows just how chaotic this world that we live in. And again, the best analogy I can think of is an ant's nest being stirred. And everybody's just scattering everywhere. And you get these mixed reports, let's just go ahead and do this. I actually thought, Dave, that the numbers that you gave me, I thought that they were getting better, but that's not what you referenced. Is that correct?
Well, they're not what they appear to be, I guess is the better way to...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And when we talked about our debt being up 59% in the second quarter, you had the U.S. economic activity that fell in the second quarter of this year more than any other quarter in history. Is also going to grow more sharply in the third quarter this year than during any other quarter in history, so updated forecasts now project. In short, forget about a rebound, Dave. Wall Street thinks the recession, which started in February, is already over. New forecasts show sustained economic growth through 2021 and beyond. It just depends on where you're getting the new forecast from. with the reports that the virus is still raging in the U.S., numbers are certainly growing. But here's where we stand as we enter the fall season. We're in bad economic shape. We've had very little economic stimulus since the unemployment checks of $600 stopped arriving in July. You still have 30 million Americans. They're still on unemployment rolls. Entire industries are still at a standstill. And economic output remains hundreds of billions of dollars below its pre-pandemic levels, with tens of thousands of businesses, if not more, closed. And they're not going to reopen. They're closed permanently. And Dave, this just isn't your mom and pop shops. There's businesses. I was talking to a gentleman earlier today. He was telling me about this one company. It was the leading company in the industry for 50 plus years. They're just going to close their doors. I don't know if there's fatigue in trying to fight to stay open. It's just easier to close, particularly if you've been successful. And you didn't have any problem. You didn't have any financial problems getting to this point. Maybe it is time to retire, Dave.
Uh-huh.
What say you?
I say COVID has made a lot of people, besides those who it's made sick, some fatally so, unfortunately, far too many. It's made prognosticators in general, financial analysts, economists, almost to the level of insane. The things that we're reading that people are saying run counter to what they just said a week or two ago, or their peers said a week or two ago, and that defy what's going on in the real economy. Again, there's this disconnect between what so many mainstream, be it the media, be it economists, are paying attention to, i.e. the stock market, notwithstanding corrections of today and last week, It defies logic. So it leads me to wonder if these people aren't going a little batty. I mean, the Fed's now out with, a more optimistic, a significantly more optimistic forecast on how the economy is going to go the rest of the year. I mean, we know that back in June, when we were at the height of reopening, the Fed expected we'd end the year with the headline unemployment at 9.3%, and saw an economy with an annualized shrinkage of 6.5%. And now today, with death rates still at their same level as they were in June, the Fed now sees the year ending with unemployment at 7.6%. And an economy that will have shrunk by just 3.7%, almost half of what they said just 3 months ago. I mean, obviously, whatever it is, I mean, with 30 million people out of work, that's terrible. With businesses that are fighting for survival, it's awful. But the difference in projections here is huge. 3 million extra jobs, more than $600 billion in economic activity over and above what they expected just 3 months ago. Come on, Jerome. What's going on there?
It's called confidence in the stock market, is what's going on. And an
It's
election year. It's
well,
what it is.
I can see that among Wall Streeters. Even regardless of what you think about the Fed, one thing I've noticed over the years is, although there is some institutional bias, that by and large the individual members remain strictly nonpartisan in their analysis. It doesn't seem so, but whatever the reason, whether they're being unduly influenced by the stock market that they've committed to prop up since this whole thing began, or whatever, what I know is that we'll know the real numbers for this quarter in just a few weeks. Closing in on, November 3rd, when tens of millions of Americans will vote, over 100 million, in fact, whether they have voted by mail by then or are in line to vote at their polling places in their neighborhood. In any event, the implications for these numbers are anything less than profound.
Well, I mean, I do believe the Fed, I mean, yeah, the Fed works with our government, and they have to keep calm. Our whole monetary system is based on confidence, so they need to keep that thing going. And ever since they started dragging us out of recessions by debt, ever since they were able to do that and create the programs, everything has just grown from that, with the creation of all these monetary policy bailouts and giveaways and everything else. It's anything but constitutional what they're doing. They ruined our monetary system. They ruined our purchasing power. They ruined the middle class. They ruined, what they've it's left us basically slaves when you look at the number of taxes. And I mean, it's, yeah, people should be outraged. And they're in, and either the Republicans or the Democrats are good for America. Neither. In fact, they're the ones that destroyed. I mean, everybody thinks that, hey, you can have 8 TVs and 20 cars, and that's great. But everybody really loses sight of what we really lost. And this is going to end badly. And they got to keep it going for as long as they can, and the Fed's part of it. And they will create and do whatever they can, say whatever they can. Remember, it's not what they do, it's what they say to keep everybody fat and happy. And it truly is amazing. And they can't claw us out of the debt. The debt can't be paid. They will default. And, you know, when? Who knows? You know, but they will. They will print until the cows come home. They will create more and more programs. It always amazes me what they can pull out of their hats, you know, to keep this going and everybody happy. You know, the stock market crashes. Look at the amount of, you know, sure, there's not a lot of individual investors in there and so forth. But the bond market's the biggest bubble in I mean, people have been waiting for that thing to break for, you know, how many years? You got 40% of your, isn't it 40% of your retirement accounts and treasuries, bonds? Or is it 30%? I don't know. But it's a big number. So you can just wipe that out of your savings account, your retirement accounts for pension plans when you retire. You know, and it's just amazing. I have my cousins. I mean, they spent their lives working hard. One company, both husband and wife working for the same company. They both have 40 plus years. So that's 80 years. And they went without so they would have a decent retirement. And what happens when that retirement goes and loses 50, 60, 70%? And they're not the only ones in this country like that. So yeah, they got to keep it going. There's no savings. How can people have a savings? They get paid squat for it. So they stick it in the stock market with their financial planners that will not help preserve their purchasing power with gold or silver. Not physical delivery, because you can't trade physical gold and silver. You can't trade it. You can't make a profit from it. But that's their business. And everybody should know that and make their own decisions. But anyway, I'm not preaching. But anyway, Dave. But we will know in a couple of weeks. And, you know, the initial U.S. unemployment insurance filings, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, fell below 800,000 for the first time since March. And we're out of time. I'm glad that came up right. Thank you, thank you, Todd. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. See, Dave, this is what happens when I get Friday off. I get all fired up for Monday.
No, God help us.
Oh, yes, he does. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter, and hopefully it'll be going out on time this week. And let's see, we got some great pricing. We have there's no delays in anything. Some of your foreign gold, now they're like the Philharmonics and the Canadian Maple Leafs. There's a couple weeks out, but there's no delays for Silver Eagles. Isn't that funny? Go figure. I think somebody was playing around in the silver physical market there with product during the difficult times. Premiums are still hefty, though, but they're certainly, my gosh, they're like $5 less than what they were. So good time to be buying. Now you can get some Silver Eagles. Now I'll support it. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. It's 1-800-375-4188, and we're still very, very competitive from those guys online. I check our prices all the time, and you get to talk to somebody. Yeah, you get to talk to us, not just putting in some numbers and Lord knows where they're going. Heading into the break, we were talking about 30 million Americans that are still receiving unemployment benefits. 30 million. Now, there's fewer people that are filing initial jobless claims. A staggering number of unemployment insurance recipients remains, and the data is growing increasingly unreliable. Multiple states' data show that the people are receiving benefits to be significantly different than the federal government figures, with a discrepancy totaling in the millions. Does that has anything to do with miscalculations, Dave? But then, do you really think we'd get? I would think that the states' numbers higher than the federal government's, or lower?
I don't know. They're probably all over the map.
So it almost seems like this unemployment system, the infrastructure. I mean, it looks to be crumbling beneath all of this. All of these jobless claims that have occurred so rapidly. I even think in a recession, Dame, at least it staggered a little bit more where this happened just all at once. California announced that it's going to halt all unemployment claim filings for the next 2 weeks as they're trying to clear a backlog of cases. I wonder how much that had to do with the fires also. That action follows a report that found its unemployment benefit systems will need a complete overhaul. See, ladies and gentlemen, the infrastructure is crumbling, Dave.
There you go. Just another aspect of it. California has their systems amassed a trove of unprocessed claims that's reached almost 600,000 and is said to be growing by 10,000 more a day. Authorities say it's going to take several more months to be cleared. I heard one person interviewed on a TV show this morning who said, in fact, that she's yet to receive her first unemployment check. And that's dating back months before the CARES Act. So, things are crazy, and I think there's probably been a lot more of that, particularly in larger states that we haven't heard about. But California's announcement is especially important, given that not only is it the largest state in the U.S., but it's also contributed substantially to the number of jobless claims in recent weeks. Traditional continuing unemployment claims fell by 256,000, and claims for the pandemic unemployment assistance program dropped by almost 600,000 for the week ending September 5th. Now, California's numbers have been significantly outside the norms for other states, they say, and from its own previous reports in recent weeks. Now, it's things like this that are contributing to a growing level of taxpayer uncertainty, and that's not good for democracy, not to mention the unemployed, who are caught in the middle, and many still waiting for weeks of backlogs of payments.
We're not going to stay on this one too long, because I've already hammered the Federal Reserve, but you're going to have the Jerome Powell and, of course, Steve Mnuchin. They're going to be in Congress tomorrow, and they're going to be grilled about more stimulus. I mean, that's been it's been a while. I mean, you had the first $2 trillion CARES Act that was passed in March, but you know that is beginning to fade, the impact. And so they need to continue to pump in more cash. It's really that simple, because the economy is not working. I don't know what you saw today, that investors are beginning to lose faith, that a deal will get done and things will continue. I'm not sure that had much to do with the stock market today, but you have the jobless benefits. That's a key part of the $2 trillion stimulus. Too big to fail. Goldman Sachs says that the failure to pass any additional fiscal measures would likely lead them to downgrade economic growth estimates. So, you know, it's I don't know, Dave. It's one minute they're improving the numbers, and then the next minute they're taking them away.
Well, it's one step up, two or three steps back, and the net result of that is that we're behind the eight ball, and it's staring us right in the face. I mean, even though you got a guy like Mnuchin who says now's not the time to worry about shrinking the deficit, you know, there's intransigence here going on in Washington. Treasury chief has been the point person for the Republicans in negotiations with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Latest Republican offers at $660 billion. Latest counter proposal from the Dems is $2.2 trillion. So Trump has said that he favors a compromise that roughly splits the difference between these two latest numbers. That would put a package of about $1.45 trillion. So, again, 40-some days till the election, even though there's less than that to the start of a new fiscal year, I'd be awfully, awfully surprised if there's any kind of deal on additional stimulus before November 3rd.
You know, earlier in the program, the first segment of the program was talking about that when I was given the market report, I didn't know how low the Dow was down. But before the markets opened this morning, you actually had the NASDAQ was down a little over 8%. So it did claw its way back, as the S&P that was down a little over 5%. So they both clawed themselves back. But again, I think it's going to show just how you know, it's a showing of the volatility and uncertainty. They closed lower for the third straight week last week. I think you're going to see the same thing this week. Friday's marked what's known as quadruple witching, the simultaneous expiration of single stock options, single stock futures, stock index options and stock index futures, all of which is associated with increased volatility. And if I had to say what went on in the markets, it probably had a lot to do with that. At the end of the month, which coincides with the end of the third quarter, global pension and sovereign wealth funds are preparing to sell about $200 billion in equities to rebalance portfolios, which are heavily tilted towards stocks. That's because stocks have delivered strong returns this quarter. Of note, particular, according to analysts, the S&P's close on Friday put the index below its 50-day moving average. Now, this is the first time since April 23rd. And again, more volatility and uncertainty for stocks as we approach the end of the third quarter. So the drop in today markets, Dave, is pretty much based on those two things then, I guess, huh?
I would think so. I think there's going to be a continuing slide. Perhaps there'll be a little bit of stabilization until you hit the 29th and 30th. Paper investors, better be prepared for a shaky ride, at least over the next 2 weeks, before you see what is in front of us for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, if this starts, I mean, is this the beginning of the avalanche, where there is no coming back, where the markets aren't going to stop, and they're just going to continue going, because then everything else is just going to be piled on top of it? I mean, here you have two simple things that's happening before Friday. People have a chance to get out before it drops. Very few people will. They'll just wait and see what happens, because they're told to stay in there. Don't sell your shares. It'll come back. Famous last words. It'll come back. And I'm not.
Or buy on the dip.
Or buy on the dip. Yeah. And again, ask yourselves, what are the fundamentals? What would bring this market back for it to go higher other than inflation? Nothing.
The Fed.
The Fed. That's it.
We'll call
another central banks.
The new fundamental.
Yes. Jeez Louise. Anyway, the Federal Reserve, which just started a second round of Wall Street stress tests, is so laughable. I saw there's a big report. I think you have it in for us to talk about, or maybe it's your newsletter, the big report about the banks and their money laundering scheme and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's no surprise. I don't know why anybody should be surprised. You know, and then I think to myself, well, all this talk about these banks going with digital currencies and so forth, that's so they could do it privately. No one will know they're doing it. I mean, it's just like, oh my gosh. But anyway, I digress. Let's go ahead. The Federal Reserve, second round of stress tests. Fed said last week that it's going to decide by the end of next week whether to prolong the limits, which are scheduled to lapse at the end of the third quarter. Any extension through the end of the year would likely disappoint banks. JP Morgan Chase, they've already indicated, might resume buybacks in the fourth quarter if allowed by regulators. I think some of the banking shares dropped heavily today, Dave. Saw that. The caps announced in June restrict banks from increasing investors' payouts above second quarter levels and ban all buybacks. The regulator, under intense pressure from lawmakers who said banks shouldn't be paying dividends during the pandemic, said at the time that an analysis showed potential risk to lenders if capital distributions continued unabated. So, you know, I don't know, Dave. It's, to me, the stress tests, you know, when the banks do fail the stress tests, they're given how long to fix the problem so they can just change the numbers around and make it work. But that's just what I think. But go ahead.
This is just, it's interesting to me, the stress test anyway, insofar as it's the first time there have been more than one round of them in the same year. So it potentially hamstrings the Fed if the numbers surprisingly come out worse, or especially substantially worse than they did earlier in the year. It could certainly put the Fed in a corner, and to not only not revisit the dividend and buyback, but to extend them. That would be highly unpopular, of course, among the banking industry and their shareholders. But, you know, in the life of the pandemic, Melody, I would just say that's the new life. Get used to it, bankers. Too big to fails, especially. They're going to be a lot of interest and focus on them. I look forward to the end of this year when the Fed rolls those new limits out.
All right, let's go ahead and, you know, again, we talk a lot about debt on this program because I believe that is it will be the death. That is the disease. And there's a lot of symptoms and so forth, but the disease is the debt. And again, we see government and business debt soar in the second quarter. I mentioned that in the beginning of the program. The Federal Reserve report released today showed the total household balance sheet in the U.S. rose to nearly $119 trillion in the April through June period. And that's a 6.8% increase from the first quarter. I guess that's all the extra buying of toilet paper in that second quarter. The gain in net worth was driven almost exclusively by the stock market, thanks in part to unprecedented fiscal and monetary stimulus. You had the S&P 500 gain 20%. That in turn led to a $5.7 trillion rise in net worth, or 75% of the total increase. You had real estate that contributed about $500 million. As financial assets climbed, debt, at least at the household level, kind of went nowhere, Dave.
Yeah, consumer credit tumbled at a post-World War II high, 6.6% annualized pace, mainly thanks to the decline in credit card balances, first time under $1 trillion since it hit that level back there, about $950 billion. I think I hear the music roaring up in the background. We will head into another break. Please stay tuned for these important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call. We got some great pricing on your gold and your silver, and we'll get it shipped right out to you. There's no delays in the product that we sell, as long as it's, you know, in our control, we get it right out to you. So, you know, again, we talk about debt. We've been talking about debt. We're going to be forever talking about debt, but the government's debt will swell over the next 30 years to almost double the size of the economy. Now, this is out from the Congressional Budget Office today. The government's debt will swell over the next 30 years to almost double the size of the economy, raising the risk of a financial crisis or a drop in the value of treasuries. I don't think, Mr. Congressional Budget Office, that we're going to have to wait for 30 years. But the nonpartisan agency in the long-term budget outlook projected the debt held by the public will reach 194% of GDP in 2050, up from 98% this year and 79% in 2019. That compares with its prior 2050 forecast of 180 from January before the pandemic struck and, of course, spurred Congress with that $3 trillion stimulus. While low interest rates makes the debt manageable for now, the budget path is unsustainable over the coming years, decades, and the borrowing costs will become an issue, Dave.
Well, it's true, and as we've discussed often on this program, some economists and academics are increasingly taking issue at their own risk and frankly, at the nation's with such views in recent years. I mean, this so-called school of modern monetary theory argues that countries like ours, which borrow in their own currency, don't need to worry about boosting debt to support growth as long as inflation remains under control. And that's a much bigger caveat than I think a lot of folks, particularly those of us who don't who haven't studied economics, can fully appreciate. But inflation is the key, and that's what I think. Where I think the falling out of these MMT theorists will hit the road and explode. I mean, CBO's projected budget deficit would boost federal debt to 104% of GDP next year, 2021. To 107% of GDP. That's the highest amount in the nation's history in 2023. And of course, as Melody mentioned, to 195% by 2050. Now, high and rising federal debt makes the economy much more vulnerable to rising interest rates, and depending on how that debt is financed, to rising inflation as well. This growing debt burden raises borrowing costs, the interest on the public debt, even with low rates. And that slows the growth of the economy and national income. More importantly, it increases the risk of a catastrophic fiscal crisis. Well, there we have it, twice the size of our economy. Probably won't be ours to worry about, although it's certainly a legacy our generation is poised to leave, Melody.
Pity the poor children and grandchildren.
Indeed.
I find this interesting. I think maybe when I was, because we talked about this during the break, and I think maybe I was thinking about the cruise ship the cruise ship lines, where so many of the employees are stuck on boats, on ships, and they can't get home. And this is the same for mariners that are stranded on shipping containers. And, you know, we talked about supply chains that have been interrupted, that it's broken. And you have cargo containers, bulkers, and other merchant vessels. They've continued to transport everything from medicines to electronics to oils, but the vessels rely on more than 1.6 million seafarers globally to operate the ships. The pandemic has stranded nearly 20% of these guys due to closed ports, borders, and cut air flights. More than 40 active seafarers or nearly as many ships describe deteriorating conditions. Nearly half didn't have current contracts, and some said they hadn't been paid in more than 2 months.
Wow.
Overtime was inconsistent if extra hours were logged at all, and this is all according to the crew.
Well, most haven't left their ships in months after the outbreak, and particularly those tied to cruise liners, and so merchant ships put an end to shore leave. The patchwork of businesses that benefit from this complicated and fragmented system that rewards on-time shipments over the welfare of nearly invisible workers has become telling. So more than 300,000 of those folks are at the mercy of their employers, and as well as shifting quarantine requirements to eventually get them home. Those seafarers represent more than a dozen nationalities, working on vessels that regularly cross the Pacific and Atlantic on global shipping lines like CMA, CGM, Evergreen, and other publicly traded companies. Now their calls for investors and consumer companies at the top of the global supply chain to take action and help get these seafarers back home.
So, but you would also have to think that if a lot of this, it's also the vessels that aren't able to get to ports. I mean, a lot of these ports are closed to certain things and so forth. And, you know, like I said, my bicycle, I'm still waiting for my bicycle.
Anchors are getting heavy in these waters, Melody.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, there's a lot of things that aren't coming into this country since basically everything is made outside of this country. So, yeah, it is. That's a lot of folks. And today we talked about this earlier, money laundering and big banks. And there was a pretty good report that came out talking about this. And Dave, you wrote about it in today's American Survival newsletter.
Yeah, interesting. Money laundering, big banks, plus the U.S. government's failure to stop it. There's actually a two-part series, part one of which is in this week's newsletter. Part two's conclusion, which will address the question, what can be done about the money laundering problem, will appear in our blog on Friday. Now, the news organization BuzzFeed, a consortium of reporters, reports that a huge trove, this is their words, a huge trove of secret government documents reveals how the giants of Western banks move trillions of dollars in suspicious transactions. And many of those transactions, it turns out, are outrightly illegal. Now, these moves have enriched the banks themselves as well as their shareholders, while at the same time facilitating the work of terrorists, kleptocrats who steal from their countries and run, and drug cartels. And the U.S. government, despite its vast legal powers, has failed to stop it. And today, thousands of suspicious activity reports, known officially as SARS, S-A-R-S, not to be confused with the virus,
please no,
are compiled by banks and shared with the government. but they're kept, and this is important, they're kept strictly from public view and knowledge. And that whole process exposes the emptiness of banking safeguards and the ease that criminals have exploited them with.
Well, yeah, before I ask you this, my personal opinion is the reason that the governments don't want to stop it is because they're also part of it. But that's another investigation you have to do, Dave. But with this, you're right that the profits from bloody drug wars, fortunes that are embezzled from, you know, developing countries by corrupt leaders, and hard-earned savings from Ponzi schemes were all allowed to flow into and out of these financial institutions despite warnings from the bank's own employees. So it begs the question, Dave.
I know you like that term. I put it in there.
I'm not sure. Are we using it properly? Just what is money laundering?
Well, money laundering is the process of making large amounts of money generated by some criminal activity, making it appear to have come from a legitimate source. The money from the criminal activity is considered dirty, and the process launders it through a legitimate source like a bank to make it look clean. In essence, money laundering is a crime that makes other crimes possible. It can accelerate economic inequality, can drain public funds, and certainly undermine a fledgling democracy, and it can destabilize nations. And banks, especially big ones, play a big role. Laws that were meant to stop financial crime have instead allowed it to flourish. So long as a bank in the U.S. files a notice that it could be facilitating a criminal activity, it all but immunizes itself and its executives from any criminal charges and prosecution. In essence, the suspicious activity alert effectively gives them a free pass to keep moving the money and collecting the outrageous fees that these banks charge.
Now, I am not a fan of FinCEN, so why don't you tell us about FinCEN?
Well, FinCEN is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. It's an agency within the U.S. Treasury Department, and it's charged with combating money laundering, terrorist financing, and other financial crimes. It's a good reason not to be enamored by FinCEN. Although it collects millions of these suspicious activity reports, it makes them available to U.S. law enforcement agencies and other nations' financial intelligence operations. It even compiles a report called Kleptocracy Weekly that summarizes the dealings of foreign leaders like Putin. What it doesn't do, Melody, is force the banks to shut the money laundering down.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I just want to say this briefly because we're going to be running out of time here. But everybody knows that if you spend $10,000 in cash, a form has to be completed for the government. And this is the form. It goes to FinCEN. And those are the ones who require it, and that's where the forms go to. So they don't want to track what you're buying. They want to track where that money is coming from because they think you're evil. They think it's drug money. And, you know, they want to make sure that we don't do it, but, you know, they'll let all these big banks and all these, you know, all these foreign leaders and the real crooks go free. But anyway, Dave, you say that in the rare instances when the government does crack down on banks, it often relies on the sweetheart deals called deferred prosecution agreements. It'll include a fine. No one really goes to jail. No one ever is arrested.
Oh, yeah. We saw this time and time again during the Great Recession, and they've only ramped up since then. I mean, there are just countless examples in this investigative report. Our newsletter article goes into a handful of them. But, I mean, even after criminals were prosecuted, not executives at the bank, but the criminals who were money laundering or submitted the money for money laundering, or after the banks were fined for financial misconduct, these two big-to-fail banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, HSBC, Standard Chartered in London, Deutsche Bank, a huge offender. The Bank of New York Mellon continue to move money for other suspected criminals. In short, here's the truth. These banks have enabled a shadow financial system so wide-ranging and so unchecked that it's become inseparable, almost, from the so-called legitimate economy. And that's the outrage of this story. Again, Friday's blog will talk about how we can make things better, if we can make things better, I think is probably the question. And as Melody would tell you, that probably depends most on having enforcers who are actually willing to enforce the law.
It's too big anymore, and that's the problem. It's too big. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to be safe out there. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Until then, good night. Be safe, and God bless. Thank
you. Bye-bye. That's too bad.